Hey, good evening out there, podcast audience. We had a little technical difficulty with our live podcast this evening, but as Ken Hodge always says, nothing or no one stops my go. So what I've done is I have my injury compensation person, Mr. Robert Frost, and I've got still have live podcast time. So what Mr. Frost and I are going to do is we're going to give you a real good look at what it's like being a part of a union. Because, and the reason I say that and I draw that is when I was in office, what you're about to experience between the interchange of information between Robert and I is what we did on a regular basis. So that's why I said you'll get a look at what we do in Kenny Hodges' administration. Hey, good evening, Mr. Frost. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Kenny.
Yeah, and it's like I feel like the Blues Brothers, man. We're putting the band back together again, man. We gotta get one or two more members to come on back, and then we have the whole band together. Hey, but listen, injury compensation. As I tell everybody, and even as I said when I posted the reading for the show, you were that guy for me. When we met, you had been going through a lot of different issues with injury comp, and rather than just let those issues take over you, you got a handle on those issues and began to understand better the process, and thereby you are a major benefit to Local 304 Columbus, Ohio branch, because not only did you know, and that which you didn't know, did you learn, but your meticulous attention to detail when following up with employees, and I know sometimes it may seem crazy that you follow up with their appointments or their due dates better than they did, and they were the ones that was injured. But again, that was just a outstanding service that was provided to the members of Columbus, Ohio. But let's get over to OWCP, little injury comp, and again, let's just talk about some things as like what should happen, what does happen, and then we can look at, after we educate people, what is going to happen. So when we talk about injury compensation, you and I spoke earlier about a notice called a CA-10. And Chris spoke on the CA-10 with us last week as well. I happen to have that form in front of me. And I just want to read it for a minute. Do you have the form with you, Rob?
Yes, I do.
Okay. In fact, see, that was a trick question because you sent it to me. But what a federal employee should do when injured at work. And again, the very first thing is report it to a supervisor. Now, let me tell you something. Go ahead, bro.
Hold on just a second, Ken. Just for some clarification for the listeners, what Ken just said is the actual title at the top of the CA-10. It says what a federal employee should do when injured at work. All right, that's not just something Kenny said. That's the actual title at the top of the CA-10.
Okay, good point.
Go ahead, Ken.
Okay, and again, if we, and again, this is a U.S. government form, and we have to understand these laws, the post office are part of, they're not bigger than. So when you read a federal law and the post office says something different, then the federal law is going to always override that. But again, it's always good to seek clarification so you're not entitled and entangled in that battle. But when we get hurt at work, the first thing is report to a supervisor. Second thing, obtain medical care. Now, let me go back to report to a supervisor as per what the federal law says and as per what the post office will do. If I'm hurt at work, when the federal law, the CA-10 tells me to report to a supervisor, what the post office has done, and again, I gotta say, I don't know the real legality of this, but it don't fit into what I'm reading right now, is the post office will allow you to sign what they call a declination statement. And a declination statement says, I don't want any medical care right now. I'm just reporting to you an injury. Now, I gotta say, the reason that's done is because CA1s are reported on a federal roster. We track CA1s. We track injuries. When we start filling out declination statements, even though there's a paper trail of you telling a supervisor, it's not an official form. And let me say this to you. I know for a fact we've been using that declination statement at least 15 years. And there it goes to show, if we're doing something that may not be correct, and again, I'm sure the post office got some policy or something written that makes that somewhat legal. But once we start to do things that are not correct, and we continue to do them, by osmosis, we think it becomes correct. And then someone comes along and goes back to the basics, reads the CA-10, read your federal your CA forms, and find out that that's not necessary, then that person looks like a troublemaker. But I'm telling you, the more I read on the rules and regulations that govern anything the post office has to do, and I don't mean to paint them with a real broad brush right now, but most of what we read, they do wrong. So anyway, I'm going to get back to the CA-10. Report to a supervisor. Obtain medical care. Now, see, here's where, and Rob, help me out here. Here's where it becomes kind of difficult, because that CA-16, that's a blank check. And the post office won't give you a CA-16 just because you asked for one. Help me out, Rob, and fill that in a little more.
No, you cannot have a CA-16. I don't care about your medical bills. I am not giving you a CA-16. No. All the federal law says I must give you the form. I am not.
So if you understand that you are entitled to that CA-16 so that your doctor is assured he's going to get paid. Hey, Rob, again, tell us more about the CA-16. Yes, it does. And that CA-16 form is so important. I mean, such a valuable document that the post office won't give it to you. See, now we have a dichotomy. Now we have a conflict. If the Department of Labor tells you that before you obtain medical treatment, ask your supervisor to authorize medical treatment by use of form CA-16, if that's a federal law and they won't give you that form, we've got an issue that needs to be addressed. And I had a situation 2 days ago, speaking with an injured employee, and again, just sharing information to her about the CA-16, I let her know that just because the post office had you go to urgent care for your first visit, that does not make who urgent care refers you to your physician. You can choose your own doctor. And one of the reasons people have a big problem with that is a lot of doctors who don't go work OWCP, they want to know how they're getting paid. Now, any doctor who works in the federal forms genre is aware that that CA-16 satisfies that. So when you post office sends you to the doctor, to the hospital, what they like to do is have you give your personal information to the hospital, and then they clean it up later. We say, I'm sorry, no. We say no. You give us that CA-16 form as you're supposed to, so these bills are never generated to come to me for payment. Have you had that happen, Rob, where you got bills to you?
Oh, I still get bills. And I had my second surgery for the injury 2 months ago. I still get bills from the first surgery. Now, let me clarify something else. On this CA-10 where it says obtain medical care, it tells you to take your OWCP 1500 form, which is nothing more than the information for your health care. All right? They want to know who your health care provider is so that the doctor can bill them. Do not take that form. Do not fill it out. Don't give any doctor that you're going to see for a work-related injury your health care information. Because what's going to happen is they won't bill workers' comp, they'll bill your insurance. If they bill your insurance, you have to pay the deductible. All right. And workers' comp is guaranteed they will pay it all. And then it takes 6 months to 18 months to get workers' comp to actually reimburse the insurance company for what is owed.
So if we follow the rules and regulations from the beginning, and make and assist in that CA-16, we can bypass that whole process of me being billed. Now I got to send them to the post office. Maybe they respond, maybe they don't respond.
Correct. Now that form also covers your hospitals. If, for example, your injury is severe enough that you have to be hospitalized, that CA-16 covers that. It also covers any pharmacy for any medications you need. So you may have to actually pay out the money initially, but you'll get it back. It just takes a while. And if you do have to fill out a reimbursement form, please feel free to call me. I will help you walk you through it, because that form is a royal pain in the butt. And if you don't fill it out exactly the right way, they'll deny it every time. Even if you've got a decimal point in the wrong spot, they will deny it.
You see, again, that's just one of the things that, again, in CityGate, one of the things that I recognized that there was a need for. And again, even though the union says they want no part of it, as a branch president, I thought it was very necessary. And from day one, I've always appreciated Robert taking on that unofficial, very important duty, and always being there for the members to give them guidance and direction. But that CA-16 form, Rob, again, that's the blank check now. And I understand the importance of that form. I understand the high priority placed on that form. But I also understand if the Department of Labor says that the post office has to give you that form, then they have to give it to you. And I think we need to really, really resound that message so we can get that message out to employees. Because again, if I got hurt at work, then that initial liability lays with the employer. It's not questionable. So, so by us educating the members, again, so we talk about going back to the CA-10, again, Department of Labor standards, report to a supervisor, obtain medical care, then file written notice. Now, again, when we talk about filing written notices, and again, I am literally reading from the CA-10, okay? In traumatic injuries, complete the employee portion of the form CA-1. Obtain the form from your employing agency. Complete and turn it into your supervisor as soon as possible, but not later than 30 days following the injury. For occupational diseases, use form CA-2 instead of CA-1. For more detailed information, carefully read the benefits and instruction sheets, which are attached to the form CA-1 and CA-2. So again, once you are injured, I'm going right by the CA-10. No less than 30 days, you can hand in a CA-1. So, and again, now we have a dichotomy. Because in the post office, and I kind of see their point on this, if there's an injury, they say it must be filled out immediately, or they look at the person with intent to bring discipline. And I'm laughing as I'm saying that, because the federal law says I have 30 days. Now, the way I understand laws is you can add to the federal law, but you can't shorten it. So the post office says, if you don't tell me right away, like today, well, we're going to bring discipline and try to controvert your claim. Well, I mean, you do whatever you want to do, but the federal law I read says I have 30 days to file this. So why do you think the post office would just want to change that, Rob?
Because they actually pay the bill, not workers' comp. The way that works is workers' comp does pay for everything, but then they add 15% to the bill and give it back to the post office and make the post office pay for it. The post office doesn't want to deal with it.
Yes, and again, that's so true, and this is why, and I do use the word alleged, and I use that very, very strongly here. When they take you to these doctors from work, I'm not saying that the doctor has already been informed, or excuse me, not the doctor, the agency that the doctor works for has already been prepped. Bring your ass back to work. Let's get this employee back to work. That's part of the negotiations when the post office contracts all this urgent care benefits. So when you go see a doctor that the post office takes you to, well, that doctor is what they call a postal doctor. When I say a postal doctor, if you can walk, you can breathe, he's going to send you to work. Because you're right, the post office don't want to pay that extra cost to injury comp, to workers' comp.
Let me clarify something there, Kenny. If you're injured and the post office sends you to the emergency room or urgent care, whatever they want to call it, all right, those doctors are just there to evaluate, see if you're injured and how severe it is. They're not actually working for the post office or however you want to put it. All right, it's the follow-up doctors that are the ones who want to put you back to work for the post office.
Okay.
All right. Now, and I'll go back and say this. I think I said it once before. You have the right, or you're either that or Kenny said it, you have the right to see any doctor you wish. This file written notice, it does not have to be on a CA-1 immediately. As Kenny said, you have 30 days. What I highly recommend you do, though, is take a blank piece of paper, and if you can write, your injury may prevent that. All right? Yeah. But if you can write down exactly what you feel happened that caused the injury. Make sure you date it, make sure you sign it, and you give that to your supervisor. That will suffice in lieu of the CA-1 until you can fill out a correct CA-1, because it tells them what caused the injury. Now, be honest, if you screwed up and you did something that caused you to get hurt, you know, it's still a workplace injury. But if you try to hide it, then when the workers' comp does their investigation and they find that, your claim's going to be not denied and you could be charged for every penny. So to be truthful, just tell them what happened, make sure it's signed, and if there's a witness, get the witness's signature. And then when you have time within that 30 days, get that CA-1 filled out and turned in.
And I like how you emphasize the be truthful, because let me tell you something, okay? I've been a lot of places, I've done a lot of things, therefore I have a lot of experience in a lot of areas that most people overlook. And the only reason I say that is because when I'm dealing with situations and I'm giving you guidance on it, let me tell you something, it's not really ever to deceive anyone. Okay, because none of us benefit from that. If you have an injury and you tell me you got hurt, then after I speak with you, I'm going to send you to see Mr. Frost, and we're just going to make sure that you get everything you're supposed to get in decency and in order. Make sure your CA1 is filled out properly. Make sure it's filed on time. Make sure you have a receipt back from there. Make sure that if you have continuation of pay coming, show you how to get it. So now I really like the point that you emphasize, be honest. I mean, again, we're not running a scam here. This is not designed to fake anybody out of anything. The whole concept of what I'm doing with the aid of Mr. Frost is advising you of your rights, not how to get over on anybody. So let's always keep that clear. And I say that because I'm probably going to say that again when we start this segment into the CA2 form. But for right now, I just want you to know everything that we show you and get you to do is right by federal guidelines and postal guidelines. So here we go. So again, right from the top, report your accident to a supervisor, obtain medical care, file written notice, obtain receipt of notice. Now, me personally, I would say, and knowledge is power, because again, for the last 15 years, I would have been in favor of the declination statement. But again, as I studied more on it, I would say, I'm going to follow CA1, and even if I don't need medical attention, I've still got it annotated. I mean, that's a thought. That's an official form, but then what would happen? Then you're right. You know what? As I said that, the answer came up that now you're playing with your 45 days continuation. So let me retract that statement and go back to what Rob was saying. Even if you don't fill that CA1 out in 30 days, make sure you give them a written note so that we got it documented. And when I say important, muy important, make sure you obtain receipt. If you fill out the actual CA1, there's a receipt page that the supervisor has to give you. Notice I said, not should, has to give you. When I complete that CA1, before you take that package to your MDO or wherever else you're going to take it, you're going to sign that receipt page that I gave this to you. Because all so often in the post office, because they deal with so many forms, things get lost. I know that's unacceptable, but it happens. I don't know. You know, you have so many supervisors and come up with, I don't know what happened to your paperwork. So as long as you have that receipt form, again, you want to get you a copy of what you give them anyway. But as long as you have that receipt form, you have receipt and you can validate that you turned your form in on whatever date it's signed as received. And the reason that becomes so important is if they, if the post office delays turning in your forms, we call that prohibiting the process. There's another fine or penalty that comes with that. This is why that receipt page is so important to you.
So, yeah, and the supervisor only has, if I remember correctly, 48 hours to have all of this paperwork turned in to workers' comp. And if they don't get it done, then they can face severe penalties.
And again, no one is advocating anything should happen to that supervisor, but let me tell you something. Part of your job of as being postal management is you have to take care of these items. It's not a, I don't care that they have you running seven stations. If that's what you're doing, I gotta say this, and I don't mean to sound ruthless, I care not about that. You still have a responsibility to do what it is that you're supposed to do with respect to safe health and the environment. So,
yep. Oh, sorry, Ken, one more thing. Many supervisors will ask you to fill out the CA1, at least I think it's the CA1, and they'll tell you, I'll put my notes down on it later, just go ahead and sign it now. Absolutely never sign that document until the supervisor fills out his portion, and you should witness him filling it out. You may not be able to, but you should, because your supervisor is going to cover their ass. Sorry to be blunt or vulgar, or whatever you want to call it, but I've had had it happen to me twice. All right? The supervisor on my last injury blamed me for a piece of equipment breaking.
Well,
okay. So, said I was using it incorrectly, and I wasn't. All I was doing was pulling it.
Because okay. you got to remember something too, Rob. I hate to cut interject, but in management, this is how this game is played. If there's an accident, immediately, we like to tell you we're going to do causative research to find out what happened. But what they're told is you better find a way to put that on that employee. So even when they do accident investigations, their thought process is so curved that they're not doing a complete investigation. What they're doing is trying to find a way to pin that accident on the employee. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Basically, that's what I wanted to say was the supervisor isn't looking out for your benefit. Supervisor is not your friend. I don't care how friendly he is on the shift, how well he treats you or she. They're not your friend when you're injured. It's always the injured person's fault. That is what they are told. I was a 204B. That is what I was told. If I investigate an injury, it's the employee's fault until they can prove it otherwise.
And that's right. And it's not. It was set up that that burden of proof is placed on the employee when they actually do a CA2, not a CA1. But again, accidents require paperwork. Paperwork requires management to do something. excuse me, to do something that requires a regimented process, and they hate that. So while they're doing paperwork, they feel in some kind of way about themselves. So now they're thinking, rather than are you okay, how can I get this paperwork to show that you were negligent and not some area or piece of equipment in the facility? So you always got to be aware of that. And after you obtain this notice verifying that you reported this accident, submit claim for COP. Now, I'm going to read a pretty thick paragraph here because it's very important. If disabled due to traumatic injury, when we say traumatic injury, we're talking about disabled due to that whatever required you to fill out the CA1. So if you're disabled due to traumatic injury, you may claim continuation of pay, COP, not to exceed 45 calendar days or use leave. A claim for COP must be submitted no later than 30 days following the injury. The CA1 is designated to serve as a claim for continuation of pay. If disabled and claiming COP, submit to your employing agency within 10 working days medical evidence that you sustained a disabling traumatic injury. If disabled beyond the COP period, or if you are not entitled to COP, you may claim compensation on form CA7 or use leave. If disabled due to occupational disease, you may claim, you can claim your compensation on form CA7 or use your leave. A claim for compensation for disability should be submitted as soon as possible after it is apparent that you are disabled and will enter a leave without pay status. So again, if you understand what I just read, all I'm saying to you is if you fill out a CA1 and your doctor is going to take you off work as a result of whatever that CA1 pertained to, then you are entitled to 45 days of continuation of pay. And Rob, how does that work?
Continuation of pay means the post office, not workers' comp, the post office is going to pay you your regular salary for the next 45 days. On day 46, workers' comp starts paying you. Now, please note, workers' comp can take a while to get you paid once they start. You have to make sure your CA7 and 7A forms are submitted on the proper day, and it'll take up to 2 weeks before they pay you. But if the supervisor or anybody, when you come back to work with your doctor's note saying you're off work, doesn't mention COP to you, You need to bring it up to them. I never knew about COP, and I almost lost mine. In fact, I did lose it the first time I was injured, and never got paid for it. I went 9 weeks without a paycheck. And it's not fun.
No, it's not fun. And what makes it even worse is the Federal Employees Compensation Act, FECA. I mean, it is set up to take care of the injured employee when this occurs. But again, agencies are being so scandalous nowadays. They hide or try to cover benefits that you're entitled to. So if we are in the knowledge that we are entitled to these type of benefits, then we as responsible members should be willing to share this knowledge so that everybody can take advantage of what's available should you get injured at work. So again, just a quick recap. When we talked about that CA-10 tonight, we talked about, again, title being what a federal employee should do when injured at work. Listen, folks, this is a one-page document. Download it, read it, understand, again, and always remember, nobody, I don't care who it is, not me, not Robert, nobody is going to take care of you like you're going to take care of you. So we're providing these different tools to help you take care of yourself. But you got to get involved in this and, again, apply yourself a little at least. If you give a little, I guarantee we'll give the rest and make sure the issue is addressed. So, again, quick recap on the CA-10. What a federal employee should do when injured at work. First, report to the supervisor. Second, obtain medical care. Third, file written notice. Four, obtain a receipt of notice. Five, submit your claim for COP or continuation of pay or some kind of other document for wage losses. Again, that is the form CA-10. And it's it's accessible to everyone. Okay, so having that information, let's get busy as far as reading a little bit and help me, help Rob, help you. Again, because if you have an issue, you can contact me directly, and I'm going to transfer you over to Robert, or you can contact Robert directly. Again, I'll provide you with email addresses. Now let me tell you this, okay, just so everybody's aware. I'm not totally having, Rob, are you totally HIPAA certified at this time?
No.
Okay, so all that means.
I'm partially HIPAA, but not fully.
Okay, all that means is, again, if you want Rob to assist you, then again, you have to be the one who initiate that and say it's okay for Rob to look at some of your documents because HIPAA law prohibits that. But if you understand he's not HIPAA, but again, and I'm going to make sure he receives that training because he's going to be a valuable asset to 304. If he's not HIPAA, you have to be aware of that. And if you still need assistance, let me tell you, I guarantee you, you're going to like the assistance that you get.
Let me explain HIPAA just a little bit. HIPAA is the
Health Insurance Portability
and
Accountability Act.
Anyone who deals with your medical information has to have your permission, and it's best if it's written permission. Okay? Because without your permission, I cannot talk to Kenny about your situation. All right? Kenny can refer you to me, because I am partially HIPAA covered, all right? But he cannot talk to anyone else about your information either. So it's a way to protect you and me as well, because if you're going to ask me for your to help you with your information, then, you know, I have to have something to protect me as well. All right, and that's just a simple piece of paper saying I give Robert Frost my permission to work on my health problem, my injury compensation. And that's really all it is, but you have to sign it and date it. I don't have any forms written out for that, but if necessary, I can print them out. Okay? HIPAA is there to protect you and your information.
So
that's all it is.
So as you can see, and I'm sorry I take advantage of this, but even though not active in my elected capacity, that does not stop me from trying to find some manner in which I can still be a benefit to the craft. And one of the benefits that I'm bringing back is, again, some kind of a, whether it's never sanctioned by the union because they feel there's a lot of liability there. And I'm not disagreeing what the national level feels about that. All I'm saying is we can still have members who have the knowledge that can still help members without it being under the title of this is a union function, even though it's a union member doing it, if that makes any sense. Sometimes we can skirt around some issues to make sure you still get the service you need.
Let me interject one thing helps here. Yeah, I initially got involved with this through the Mail Handlers Union. I am still officially the volunteer injury compensation person for the union. And keyword there is volunteer. There's been one or two stewards who've been assigned to do the job, but they haven't done the job. And I've already found at least one of them giving out incorrect information. All right. My point here is I'm not here just for the Mail Handlers Union. If anybody in City Gate gets hurt, I don't care if they're a clerk, office person, whatever, if it's an injury at work, I will help them. Now, I lean more towards the Mail Handlers Union, obviously. But it also doesn't matter if it's any federal employee who gets hurt on the job. I will help. Anyone away from the post office, I have to do it on my own time, away from work. If they're injured at work at the City Gate especially, then I can actually take time and use steward time to help them with it.
Well, now what happens is, right now you can get time, but in order to get the steward time, BIP has got that expressly set out to Chris Smith that if you're not on the steward certification sheet, that they're not going to give you steward time, but we'll make time. That much I'm certain of.
Right.
We've made time in the past, and we'll make time in the future. Again, if it's something that's going to help the members, we'll find a way to get it done.
Yeah, even if I have to do it after I get off work.
100 degrees. New. Direction. And again, I just want everybody to understand, because if you have an injury issue that I know about, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to let you know that this is not a union sanctioned function, but that's the only person I'm going to refer you to. And again, and I refer you to Mr. Frost because we've worked with Sue Grice and others in the post. So again, we've gone down this road and established some type of rapport, whether it be good or bad. So this isn't something that we just dreamt up yesterday. We've been working this about 2 years now. Through different situations, we haven't been consistent for one reason or another. But to the mail handler craft right now, I speak. It was a beautiful benefit to have somebody dedicated to OWCP. Again, just like the APWU has. The clerk craft, they've got a person that's dedicated. And think about this. If you're dedicated... Go ahead.
Ken, no, they don't. They're a person retired, and they're not going to replace her.
They're not? Well, that was a beautiful thing.
No.
That was a beautiful thing that they had. And I'm sure the clerks cry out enough that's just a beautiful asset to have. And again, it's not making the union responsible for anything except for providing an excellent service to members. Another thing that'll make you say, I'm glad, I'm proud to be a part of 304. Because as local president, and I'm not going to get on the soapbox here, whatever it is that affects mail handlers, that's what I want to address. So let me climb down off of that soapbox because I can get real comfortable there. But listen, we're going to do Tuesday night, 7:30. OWCP podcast. And again, this podcast, and let me give you a little history on what's not history, a little up-to-date notices. This podcast is going to be, again, as I always speak good things into the future. Once elected, this podcast is going to be a staple for 304. So whatever, again, affects the members in 304, I'm going to have some kind of way for them to address it and get answers to it so that they always know that whatever affects me, my local president's got a response to it. So this podcast, I want, you know, eventually we're going to get more folks calling in and we're going to grow this because, again, this is a 304 mail handler member function, not a union function. And it sounds crazy that I have to keep saying that, but my understanding is the union wants no part of OWCP. So even though I'm telling you we're going to provide this, but it's not going to be provided by the union, if that makes everybody in the union happy. But to the members, again, doesn't matter how I bill it. What matters is there's going to be a single point of contact that you can call that will make sure your CA-1s are filed, your CA-16s are done, so that your doctor is getting billed and not you. So again, critical service that we're trying to roll out to the local 304. Hey Rob, listen. Tonight was the first night, and again, we probably could stay here for about another hour or two, but we're going to bring this to a close. And again, every Tuesday night, 7:30, Kenny and Rob talks OWCP, and we'll have a host or a plethora of different OWCP personnel in the post office, at the post office, joining us as we further develop our knowledge so that we will be in a better position to educate the members. Hey, Rob, go ahead and say your good nights, and let me say to you, I'm honored to have you a part of the cast, and it's good to work with you again, man.
Well, I appreciate the invitation, Kenny, and like I said, I'm happy to help anybody that I can.
Okay, folks, there you have it. First installment of Kenny and Rob talk OWCP. It's got a ring to it. I like it. Okay, every Tuesday night, 7:30, that's the new show. Kenny and Rob talk OWCP. Don't be afraid to call in. Again, we talk about real world situations. If it's happening to you right now, and again, we will provide guidance. Just another support program, part of the 180 degree new direction. You gotta love it, folks.